Welcome into the Locked On Knicks podcast. We are once again joined by Spencer Perlman of The Stepien. As we found out in the lead up to our initial episode, Alex, he has like five or six jobs. But that didn't stop him from coming on the podcast and dropping some incredible knowledge. This time we go really deep. A lot of different guys that we haven't covered yet who could be available to the Knicks at 27 or even at 38.
Yeah, we talk about Sam Merrill, a really talented shooter and just overall player who's a little on the older end, which has kind of turned NBA teams off to a degree. Talk about Paul Reed, a defensive menace who could potentially be available there and, you know, be a good stretch 4-5 kind of guy for the Knicks. We talk about Yam Madar, an intriguing Israeli point guard who Spencer described as one of the more irritating defenders in this whole draft. Leandro Balmaro, one of the more skilled passers in the draft. Robert Woodard, a really intriguing 3-and-D type player that could potentially be available to the Knicks. And Nico Mannion, who kind of dropped on draft boards, but still, you know, at least the Spencer especially still has some real potential for the NBA to potentially burn some teams for passing on him for so long. And Emmanuel Quickley, who's a kind of scrappy shooter from Kentucky. Obviously, the Knicks have that Kentucky connection. So we're getting into all that and much more next on Locked On Knicks.
You are Locked On Knicks, your daily New York Knicks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
And I think we see Willis coming out. There he comes right now.
Anthony for three. Bang! That one goes down.
This is all about back up off the glass. It's good. RJ
Barrett. Becomes infectious.
So to move on to another player, this is one that you referenced it already. We sort of game planned a little bit who we would potentially talk about here. And this was someone that you suggested that I'll be quite honest, I have not done a ton of looking into. And that's Sam Merrill out of Utah State. He was a 4-year player there, shot 42% on about 6 attempts a game over 4 years there. The past 2 years on increased volume and role overall has scored about 20 to 21 points per game. Also averaged around 4 assists the last 2 years as well, which, you know, not a perfect indicator or anything. And shot 89% from the free throw line, too. One of my knee-jerk reactions to him, too, is that looking at his picture on Sports Reference, he kind of looks like blonde J.J. Redick. So it sounds like his game is sort of similar to that, if not quite as good. So can you, for anyone else like me that has not done their homework on Sam Merrill, can you give sort of a crash course? Because I think that he's definitely someone that could be in play with pick 38.
Yeah, he's absolutely an elite shooter, both off the bounce and he can shoot off movement as well. He's a very good passer. He's not someone who can really run full time at point guard, but if you're trying to have a point guard by committee running out, you know, 2 or 3 guys who can each handle a little bit, he'll slot right in there. He's a good defender too. He's not super, super athletic, but he does a good job using his strength to get into guys on the opposing end of the perimeter and, slow them down on that first step so then he can stay with them. Really the only downside is that he's 24, but you know, I just did another podcast yesterday, actually Locked On Pacers. And I said that if he were 20, he'd probably be a first round pick. And I really think that he's just incredibly skilled on offense. Just good, smart defender. Just not someone who can really lock guys up, you know, one-on-one if they're lightning quick. But I'd love to see him in New York also. I think 27 is definitely too high for him. 38's too high for him probably, or at least maybe value wise, you could maybe trade back a couple picks, but in a draft like this, like if you like somebody, because you don't really know where anybody can go, just like take him if you like him. But yeah, really, really good shooter. He's a good passer too.
Is someone like Isaiah Joe considered 20 spots ahead of him purely because he's 4 years younger, or like what's the difference there?
I think the age definitely factors into it. And then just, you know, role maybe. Isaiah Joe's going to come in just like a pure spacer. Whereas, you know, having somebody who's not the pure spacer that Isaiah Joe is, but might be able to do a little bit more because of his on ball, might be working against him in that way. I don't really know if that makes sense, but like, I just think Joe being able to come in and immediately just play off the ball like full time, I think that might be why he's 20 spots higher, and then him also being, you know, 4 years younger.
That gets into like, this is like a little like tangent, so we can see how far down we want to go this road, but it gets into an interesting scouting philosophy question for me, where I think you just pointed out like sort of a fascinating phenomenon where it seems like teams a lot of times, and maybe just because it's like, to your point, it's an easier projection. They prefer guys who in the NBA will be playing the same role they did in college versus, and this is like a generalization, I'm not sure if this is always true, versus a guy who like did more in college, but probably won't be quite good enough at like his best skill or his second best skill to do that in the NBA consistently, at least right away. And even Alex, like someone you brought up, like JJ Redick, like was an interesting example where, and like I've heard like JJ talk about this on his podcast, where like at Duke, like he was the leading scorer in America on like the team in America and in the NBA. He had to turn himself into like, all right, you're a role player, like run around a ton of screens and shoot threes every once in a while kind of guy. And it seems like teams like take that as a negative. And Spencer, I was wondering when you guys, like, how do you take that into account? Like someone who like, you know, absolutely to a T who they will be in the NBA. They do this one thing. They're great at this one thing. It's a really, really clean fit in any offense, in any system, versus someone like Merrill, who like, again, like against like probably less than ideal competition, like kicked ass at a bunch of different things, but you have to look at all of it and you have to say, is the shooting the only thing that translates? And then even if the shooting is the only thing that translates, you can say like, all right, but maybe he's still better at that one skill than Isaiah Joe is, even though that was the only thing Isaiah Joe really did in college. So I'm throwing a lot at you, but I guess like, how do you take that all into account when you rank players?
Just generally speaking, I think using someone's well-roundedness against them is a little bit like foolish. Just because, you know, skill is what wins in the NBA, and versatility, that's really what sets you apart. But in the same breath, you have to say that somebody who can come in and be maybe not elite, but like sub elite at a skill will have that edge, just because most guys aren't going to have the usage or the on ball time in order to showcase the full repertoire. Whereas if you're just a plug and play shooter, you can come in and you could just do your job and be done with it. But I mean, like I don't really understand why Merrill is so low, like specifically him, because even though he is very well rounded, he's also a very skilled shooter in his own right. So saying that there's a 20 spot difference between Isaiah Joe and someone who's not the shooter, but he's more skilled, just kind of seems stupid, because you could put Merrill in an Isaiah Joe-esque role, and though maybe he won't be as good, he might be able to provide some different things that Joe can't.
Yeah, I'm going to call that the Brandon Clark effect, the age thing.
Yeah.
Because I always said the same thing about Clark. I wonder if people are tired of hearing me like kvetch about Brandon Clark at this point. But I mean, I would say the same thing last year to anybody that would listen. Like, I feel like he's probably easily top 10 material, if not top 5 material, like based off watching him play. Like, he showed a lot of similarities to freaking Zion. You know, if we're talking about guys that looked similar to, you know, someone else in their same draft, but went 20 spots later, and yet, you know, he slipped to pick 20 something and then proved anyone like myself or like you or like most of the people that we talked to last year right by being way better than the 20 something it's pick in the draft, especially as a rookie. And it was, I think teams were just scared off by the fact that he was 23 years old, just like Merrill's 24. So it's like you're bringing in a guy to the NBA that's, you know, I guess you just assume is already at their physical and playing peak. But if they're good, then who really cares? But that's, I guess, a whole other podcast. It's just in the interest of keeping things moving along, though. You brought up another guy that I'm not super knowledgeable about. So I'm really intrigued to hear your sort of initial scouting report on Paul Reed, who's a 6'9 forward out of DePaul, and put up averages of 15 points, almost 11 boards, 2 assists, 2 steals, 2.5 blocks this past year. From just the little bits that I've heard about him, I mean, those stock numbers, you know, the steals plus blocks are pretty staggering. And, you know, that seems to be his calling card. But what, you know, what's kind of your base scouting report on Paul Reed? And do you see him more as a guy that the Knicks would be looking at potentially with pick, you know, 27? Or is he more a candidate for 38? And also, would he be the first or second best DePaul player ever taken by the Knicks in the draft after Wilson Chandler? Just a reminder, today's episode is brought to you by Built Go. Built Go makes you the best you at whatever you do, and it helps you break through your wall. Whatever type of wall it is, it could be a mental wall, physical wall. You can break through it with Built Go every day. Built Go comes in easy to take 1.5 ounce packages. I would say that you could put it in your briefcase for the most focused presentation ever, but let's be real. You don't have a briefcase right now. You're sitting in your pajamas. You put on a nice shirt and go on Zoom. So you can keep it in your shirt pocket, you know, before you go on that Zoom call to give your presentation. Take your Built Go. Give the best presentation ever. You could put it in your golf bag, a nice, very COVID-safe activity during this re-outbreak of the fall. You could, you know, take a Built Go and power through the back nine. Or you just put it in your pocket just to get through the day. You know, life's hard, but, you know, Built Go makes it easier. It is the best workout gel on the market. It's a lot like that 5-hour energy you hear so much about, but you don't get that same crash feeling. And it's made with all natural stuff, so it's better for your body. Built Go also comes in 3 delicious flavors. I can testify, I've had all 3. They were all fantastic. Peanut butter honey, chocolate coconut, and chocolate mint. My personal favorite is the peanut butter honey because the consistency of Built Go is somewhat like honey. It is a workout gel, it is called. And so having the peanut butter honey just tastes just right. How does it work so well, though, Built Go? Well, it combines energy gel with collagen protein. Collagen protein is fast absorbing, so it gets into your system fast and it's easy on your stomach. It's also loaded with good stuff to ignite your work, like beta-alanine, B3, and honey. And a kick of caffeine to really, you know, kick you in the butt. And then it kicks in to really keep you going strong with vitamins B6 and B12. 10,000% of your daily dosage of vitamins B6 and B12. I could say I took Built Go before my workouts. You know, my gym was operating safely and hopefully it will for a while longer. But, you know, as long as I'm able to keep going to the gym with COVID, Built Go has been helping me a lot with my workouts, getting my muscle back that I lost from my time away from the gym during the start of COVID. And I get way, way better results if I take a Built Go before I go to the gym than if I don't. Also, the collagen protein promotes joint, soft tissue, hair, and skin health. So it literally makes you look better in addition to making you feel better. So if you're interested in getting some Built Go for yourself, visit builtgo.com. And use promo code LOCKED, and you'll get 20% off your next order. Again, use promo code LOCKED for 20% off at builtgo.com. Let's go.
Yeah, I was going to say Wilson still has number one there. yeah, I'd probably lean more towards taking him at 27. I don't really think he's going to get to 38. Although, you know, maybe I guess he does just because, again, who the hell knows what's going to happen on draft night. But he's probably one of the best guys in this draft at using his length. Like, the stock numbers just kind of tell, you know, 90% of the story. And then the other 10% you could just kind of, you know, gather because he's not always in the right position. You know, he might rotate a little bit late. He might be a step slow on the perimeter. But because he uses his length so well, he's able to just, like, create plays. Which is, it's a good thing because, you know, the quick reactions and all that stuff. And it's also a bad thing because when the game speeds up against better players, you won't have that wiggle room in order to make the necessary adjustments. But yeah, really, really good defensive playmaker. He makes some nice rotations and he just kind of misses pretty obvious ones, which makes the impressive ones kind of more confusing. Then offensively, he's a good finisher. He's more of like a garbage pail kind of guy. Not really a pick and pop player. Like there's some stuff he showed there, but the shot needs more work before he can actually fully unleash the rest of the skill, which is a shame because like he had some of the nicest left-hand perimeter drives from any big in the draft this year where he'd pump fake, he'd take a couple dribbles in, he'd have like a scoop around a guy or he'd like Euro step or something like that. Just soft touch in the paint. Just, you know, if the shot doesn't come, he can't really use that well. But like I'd probably take him above Isaiah Stewart. Even though Stewart might have the easier shooting projection, just because I'd buy Paul Reed more defensively in space.
All right. I think the last guy we wanted to touch on and the person I'm most personally excited to talk about is Leandro Bolmaro. His name, I think, has come up previously on a couple of podcasts we did, but I don't think we ever really went in depth on him. Just a guy, if you want to throw on someone's highlight tape, I would say one of like the 3 to 5 like most fun tapes I've seen in this draft process. Incredibly talented passer, seemingly a strong defender. A lot of questions about his jumper. What does that guy look like in the NBA, Spencer? Because that's been sort of my big thing. Because I was trying to think like who like the easy comp is, and I couldn't even think of someone just from like a pure passing perspective. Like I thought of like that one season like Teodosic had with the Clippers where he was like, or he looked like gassed at all times, but he was just throwing like absolutely wild passes at different points. And I couldn't really put my finger on any one player, but I feel like you sometimes see this more in European guys than American guys, like these guys who have like these very, very distinct games and like audacious, like style of playing in terms of like pace and just the passes they'll attempt. I'll stop rambling, but I'm very excited about Bolmaro.
Yeah, he's really fun. I love Teodosic and he's playing overseas too. It's just like, I'm pretty sure he was probably also smoking a pack of cigarettes during games here.
Zach Lowe would like every time he'd bring him up, he'd be like, yeah, you know, he just smoked a pack, but he's coming in and he's throwing dimes.
Yeah. I think Bomaro's, I don't think he's that level of passer just because I think Teodosic is literally one of like the probably most gifted passers of, I think, of all time.
Yeah.
Bomaro is probably more in that Killian range of a passing ability, except more offhand ability, so not quite LaMelo. Yeah, I mean, I guess somewhere between LaMelo and Killian. Really gifted passer. He's an awesome left-handed passer too, which is incredibly impressive given he's righty, obviously. But really, really good point of attack defender. Really quick, like really quick in tight spaces. Does a really good job getting over screens. Not really someone who's going to lose track of his man that much off ball either. It's just what can he do without the ball on offense? You know, if the shot comes, then like he's going to be a very good rotation player. And if it doesn't, he's going to be kind of like, you know, a third string point guard maybe, and probably just better suited staying overseas. But I mean, like, honestly, again, in this draft, he's still there at 27. And if you want to take a draft and stash guy and just, you know, tell Barcelona that they need to work on his shooting and we'll give you even more money than the buyout will call for, like, I would do it because I think he's someone who could really pay off.
All right. I got a couple. Gavin could speak for himself saying he's just about done because I got a couple more guys that I still just am curious about and wanted to get to on the show here. I did want to there's two guys specifically, and then one more that I want to throw in if we have time. But Nico Mannion is someone that has really been interesting to me to watch throughout this whole process, really starting all the way back at the beginning of last college season, because he came out on fire, started because of, you know, his physical profile and how he started playing. And it was definitely unfounded. I mean, he's definitely not as skilled, but people were throwing like Trae Young comparisons at him out there. He's a point guard out of Arizona. He came out and was, you know, initially just on fire, like to start the season, was, you know, shooting really well and everything else. And then came like way back to earth. His final averages, which I'm pulling up real quick, wound up being 14 points. He shot a little under 40% from the field and 33% about from three. But it seemed to me like he had a good amount of responsibility thrown on him at Arizona to kind of drive their offense and be the offense. So I'm kind of curious what your take is on him, because he went, I mean, all the way from at the offset of last season, you know, the beginning where we had the you know, first mock drafts coming out, the, like, way too early, you know, first 3 weeks of college mock drafts. He was, like, in the lottery. And then now, I mean, there's some, you know, mocks where you could see him going almost till the end of the second round at this point. So I'm kind of curious what your thoughts are on him, particularly if the Knicks, you know, again, we've been talking about this a lot, but if they go wing with their first pick, and then maybe let's say they go big with that second pick, is he a guy that you would maybe consider looking at to get a guard, you know, a point guard specifically at that third pick at 38?
Yeah, I mean, I would. It would obviously depend on who else is available, but, you know, he's young. He can shoot it. Like, the percentages don't do it justice. I think, like, the reason why they kind of were what they were was because he was the offensive creator for Arizona's team. For whatever reason, Coach Miller just didn't really feel comfortable playing Josh Green a little bit more on ball, even though he was a more than capable passer, someone who could actually run some sets through, which is a big mistake. So, I mean, he's a really good passer. He's a really good shooter. He's a really good passer, too. Does a great job manipulating defenses with fakes, you know, ball fakes, pass fakes, change of speed, just kind of everything. Defensively, he's another guy who's just kind of smart. He's also small. He plays pretty physically, not to like the Malachi Flynn level, but I think Malachi is just kind of like an outlier in that regard. His anticipation on defense is really good. Like, there are a number of times where he'd kind of think that he would think that the ball handler wasn't going to be going in a certain direction, and he would just beat him to the spot and draw charges. You know, the issue with him, aside from just being a one position defender, is he's not a good finisher. So, you know, if he gets a little bit stronger, if the floater percentage goes up a little bit more, which it should, then, like, sure. I could 100% see him being a good backup point guard. Beyond that, I think it's probably going to be a little bit tougher. And this is coming from somebody who, like, I love Nico coming in. I had him in the lottery. Like, I'm not afraid to admit that. But, you know, he kind of disappointed a little bit, and I think he was a victim of circumstance, so he fell a little bit, but he's going to, I think, likely end up being a pretty good value pick where 5 years from now, he's going to be in the rotation in a playoff team potentially, and people are going to kind of question why he fell.
Do you still have a first-round grade on him? He was a guy, like, I think to your point, I was curious, like, what do you think was ultimately the factor in why he fell so much? Because he definitely wasn't, like, terrible this year. It just seemed like maybe he struggled with, like, college-level athleticism a little bit more than people thought he would. But do you think, like, has your view of him as a prospect, like, changed dramatically? Or do you more so think it's, like, just the general perception that has?
No, I mean, it's definitely changed for me a lot. Like, I don't view him as a lottery pick anymore. I view him definitely more as, like, an early second-round pick, late first, like that 25 to 35 ish range, 25 to 40 ish range. You know, why he fell, I mean, he definitely took him some time after, I guess, the start to get used to the college athleticism. But the finishing was a big issue, like, the entire season. So, I mean, you couple that together with the shooting that didn't really come through the same way it should have, or that people thought it would. And that's why he fell.
Mm. Yeah. Another guy that's been on my mind lately that I've been thinking about as a potential pick maybe at 27 or you know, again, I feel like he might go in the 27 to 38 range. So it'd be difficult to get him, or maybe earlier, you know, if some team really is needy for wings and there's just really not that many wings in this draft outside of the top part of the draft. And that's Robert Woodard, which I talked about him briefly with Wasserman when we had him on the other day. But I wanted your thoughts on him because I've been looking into him a little more and I find him really intriguing. I mean, he didn't exactly shoot threes on volume. So, you know, each season in the NCAA, particularly this one, is about a 30-game sample size, which, you know, in the NBA is not even half a season. So, you know, it's not necessarily what you should be basing full evaluations off of. But he went from shooting 27% on about 1.5 threes per game to shooting 43% his sophomore year on about 2.5 attempts per game. So that's like a 16-point jump almost from his freshman to sophomore year from three. I guess my question, this was kind of how I framed it to Wass too, is do you buy the shot and do you buy him potentially being a like a 3-and-D wing in the NBA, basically, because it seems like that's what he would project to be.
100% by the shot. Like, the form is too good for you to just kind of not. It's just a really smooth release. Maybe it's, like, a little bit slow, so he's not going to be, like, a movement shooter, but he will shoot the ball, I'm almost certain, in the NBA, like, a good clip, like 38% and above. In terms of his role, I think he's just a strict 3-and-D guy. Like the comparison that I've kind of thrown out is he's a little bit more skilled, more Harkless, more athletic. He's stronger on the defensive end also. But just kind of that stationary shooting, maybe, you know, 1-2 dribble pull-ups off the bounce on closeouts and then just attacking the rim. But he should be like another just plug-and-play guy. And he is really strong. It was like 6'7 with a 7'2 wingspan, like 230 pounds, I think, like 5% body fat or something like that. And just like a really good athlete. If the Knicks take him there, I'd feel more than comfortable running him actually as a small ball four in some units and just having some, like, you know, if they take Killian, say, with the first pick, and then with the second pick, maybe they take Woodard at 27. And then, I don't know, 38, they take someone else. Who cares? But you could have, like, Frank at the 1, RG at the 2. You could put Dotson at the 2, RG at the 3, Robert Woodard at the 4, Mitch at the 5. Like, it's going to be interesting. I don't know how, I guess, well it will work, just kind of thinking it through after I say that on the air. But in terms of having four guys who can switch, I think that would be really fun. But, yeah, I'm a big Robert Woodard fan.
Yeah, considering, sorry, Gavin, I just had like a follow-up with that. Considering how much he's kind of built like a brick shit house, I hadn't even really thought about this before, but do you maybe see, and this is projecting a lot because I think that this person has become a really, really good player over time, but being built huge like that, having the pretty long wingspan for a guy who's 6'7", could you potentially see him turning into like PJ Tucker-esque? I mean, that was kind of what I was thinking as you were just describing some of those traits. And he's a guy I've been thinking about lately, but that's not a comparison I had thought of because some places, depending on where you look, profile him anywhere from a 2 to a 4. And I don't see 2 at all. I could definitely see a 4. And I wonder if maybe he would become kind of a PJ Tucker in the NBA.
He'd have to get more physical. Yeah. That's not to say that he's not physical now, but PJ is like bodybuilding, powerlifting, like strong, and knows how to use every ounce of his muscle. So I guess I wouldn't really put that on him yet. But like, you know, maybe he can get some spot minutes as a small ball five, depending on who he's playing against. Like if he's going up against Draymond, like, yes, throw him out at the five and you could definitely put some, you know, great spacing lineups out there. I don't think he'll be able to hold up though against true fives, maybe the same way PJ can yet.
right. I'm gonna start off by acknowledging that this is probably a stupid question, but I'm assuming other people have the same stupid question, so I'll throw it out there anyways. Why a year ago in like what was nominally like maybe less deep, but like nominally like a better draft, is someone like DeAndre Hunter a top five pick when Robert Woodard's a borderline first round pick? I'm looking at their stats right now, almost identical. I think when you recited like his height and wingspan, I think that was the same as Hunter. And I think if I remember correctly, like Hunter was considered like someone who could be like an all NBA type of defender, and maybe Woodard doesn't fit into that category. Maybe Hunter had like more projectability as like a versatile offensive weapon. But like just on paper, those two guys to me, as someone who's an idiot and doesn't know anything, they sound similar. So I'm curious, like what is the difference there between those two?
I think Hunter was actually taller. If I remember correctly, he measured in close to like 6'9" maybe in sneakers, whereas Woodard was like 6'7" and change in sneakers, but like 6'5.5" without. Strength wise, I think Hunter was more physical. I think he had more of an offensive game also. In terms of defensive ability, I think Robert Woodard's his feel on defense and just his IQ might have actually been a little bit better than Hunter's, but he wasn't the same point of attack defender that Hunter was. I mean, maybe, you know, some of the instincts for Hunter would have developed more in a non-UVA strict defensive scheme, but like you can't really, you know, project that. If you want to say like maybe he's like a lesser DeAndre Hunter type, sure. I just like, I don't know. I've kind of stuck with a better Mo Harkless. But you know, comps suck in general. So,
okay. Fair enough.
Yeah.
All right. last guy, Alex, you inspired me to keep going. I want to throw out there is someone I know almost nothing about, but, I love Israeli basketball players. So, I'm going to butcher his name, Yam Madar. That might not be it. Might be it. What is he like? It seems like he can really shoot potentially, and I don't really know much else other than that.
Yeah, he's fun. That's probably like the best way to describe him. He's fun on both ends of the court. He's a gifted ball handler. Like the pace that he plays with, just his ability to keep the ball really tight. Like I've seen him so many times of like a 1-2 cross under a dig before getting it back to a strong hand, then like having, you know, a shuffle pass or a kick out or something like that. He's a good passer, if not sometimes maybe too flashy. He's a good finisher with both hands also. He's pretty like aerodynamic in terms of body control and stuff like that. He's not that strong, but he does finish well, and he does a nice job getting the ball over the outstretched arms of the defenders. And then defensively, he's another just straight up gnat. Like he's a gnat. I was actually texting with his trainer on and off over the last few months, and the one name that I kind of threw out was that he's kind of like, he has that Pat Beverly attitude on defense where he's not going to let you show him up, and he will just compete. Again, similar to Malachi, the full 94 feet. He was an absolute pest on Denny in the playoffs. Like, there were times where Denny just couldn't get the ball past either half court. He got called for an 8-second violation a couple times, or 10-second. I forgot what it is overseas. Or he'd have to give the ball up immediately just because Yam was right there. Off ball, he kind of needs some work on defense. There's some rotations that he makes are nice, but then he'll just kind of lose his man other times and be in the wrong position. So he's a better on-ball defender than off. Shooting is inconsistent. He has some weird misses, but he gets good lift on it. He has pretty good range. I do think the shot will come. Just, you know, again, the free throw shooting, the touch. Apparently the shot has gotten a lot better too. So, you know, take that for what it's worth. But Yam is actually someone who I would, like, I think if he played in the NCAA, he's another guy who would be potentially grouped in with that Tyrell Terry, aside from Kevin O'Connor, who has him in the lottery, just that around that 20th pick in the draft type of range. Like, him and Malachi Flynn, I would probably have pretty close.
All right. I think I just have one more guy, and you could go brief on him if you want, but one more guy that sort of intrigued me. We actually had a good piece come out on the Strickland about him recently, is Emmanuel Quickly, who's, I don't think he's a point guard necessarily. I think he's a small shooting guard, but he's 6'3", but has a plus wingspan. I believe it's 6'10". He shot really, really well from three this past year, 43% on almost five attempts per game. He doesn't have, you know, he struggles going inside, but he seems to be a really good defender and a really, really hard worker. Another guy I think that reasonably could go anywhere from 27 to 38, or maybe potentially a little after 38, but probably not too much further after that. What are kind of your Cliff Notes thoughts on Emmanuel Quickly as far as his potential fit, especially with that Kentucky connection with Kenny Payne now on the Knicks?
He's a really good shooter. He definitely showed some promise just kind of all over the court on defense also. But the main thing with him will just be, like, who's he kind of guarding full time? Because he doesn't have great size. Even with the plus wingspan, I don't think he's above 200 pounds yet. But I might be mistaken there. But yeah, I mean, again, just the shooting and, you know, the defense flashes that he showed. Like, sure, you know, in the second round, if you can get someone who can probably come in and have that rotation place as a shooter, it's definitely worth a look.
All right, Spencer, this is something I was going to ask you after we stop recording, but I think other people would be interested in it. How do you watch the draft? Are you just like popping some champagne and celebrating that you're done with the scouting? Are you locked into it like it's an NBA Finals game? Like, I'm just curious after like, I mean, you and like every other draft Nick in the world, like after you guys literally pour like a year of your lives into like, or probably more with like a lot of these guys into these players, like when that night finally comes, like what's like, how do you even enjoy it?
Well, last year I was disappointed because I wanted to be next to draft Brandon Clark. So aside from that, yeah, I mean, it's fun. Just kind of like, it's a lot of, wow, really? And then like, oh, that was a good pick. Just kind of like that. But it's fun, I guess, kind of listening to people who clearly don't know as much about basketball, not about basketball, about the draft guys trying to talk about the draft. Like, I think Jay Billis is fantastic. I think he's really good calling college games. I don't really know if he's as good with projecting guys going forward. Yeah, I mean, this year I'm doing two streams. So like, I'll be on Nick Fan TV, and then I'll also be on Macri stream too. But yeah, it's a lot of questioning stuff. And then also the other extreme, just like, oh, that was a good pick. Yeah. And then, of course, you know, you have Woj. Like last year, the battle with, like, you know, he wasn't actually saying who he's picking. It's like there are very strong rumblings, or yeah, the ink is not dry.
Lasered in on, yeah. And then I don't know, but yeah, Nate Silver like quote tweeted it, like Joe Biden is lasered in on the Electoral College, which is really.
I didn't see that, but that's fantastic.
A friend of mine and former host of Locked On Nets, Marcus Barahal, made like Woj style, like Valentine's Day, like love cards. Like, I am lasered in on you. And he made a good variety. So if anyone's in the market, hit me up. But Spencer, thank you so much. You're incredibly generous, as always, with your time. I think it's just generally like on your Twitter. But like, where can people find your work these days if they're trying to really catch up on all these guys in a more in-depth way than we can offer on the podcast?
Yeah, all my scouting reports are up on the Stepien. So thestepien.com. You'll find, I think it's either 38 or 39 draft profiles before I have to stop. But those are all up on there, and I think they're incredibly detailed. They're definitely long, but there's also like a summary page to start if you don't want to go to the, you know, how well they flip their hips and stuff like that. But yeah, I mean, aside from that, I'm on Twitter at SK Perlman, and yeah, I'm back to posting a lot about the basketball and the draft. So yeah.